Hello, beautiful ladies. This is Dr. Emily Kybird. We are going to talk about something very special, top of mind. I've been seeing a lot of clients today. You could be doing everything right for your thyroid, eating clean, hitting your protein goals, taking the supplements, doing the workouts, and you're still struggling with brain fog, fatigue, like that crushing fatigue that hits at 2, and stubborn weight. Maybe you're even a little bloated and you're burping after you eat. What if the root cause of all these symptoms, the fatigue, the brain fog, the weight, isn't your thyroid, but a stealth infection going on in your stomach, in your gut? Let me say that again. What if the root cause wasn't your thyroid, but a stealth infection going on in your gut? I'm Dr. Emily Kybird. I'm a Hashimoto's expert, a functional medicine doc, and the host of Thyroid Strong podcast, which you are listening here today. And today we are going to focus on H. pylori, Helicobacter pylori. It is a bacteria in your stomach that you cannot ignore, 100% cannot ignore, especially if you have Hashimoto's. And you'll learn why H. pylori impacts your thyroid, how to test for it, and what to do about it here today on this podcast. So let's break it down. What is H. pylori? And why should you care? So if you're struggling with brain fog, bloating, burping, fatigue, constipation, lean in, grab a pen and paper, and start taking notes. So H. pylori, Helicobacter pylori, is a spiral-shaped bacterium. I say spiral-shaped specifically because it burrows into your stomach lining and infects the stomach lining, almost like a screw. And when you screw a screw into the piece of wood, it really gets in there because it's spiral-shaped. H. pylori is very common. About 80% of the world's population is infected with it. In the States, the stats are 50% of people are infected with it, but only 10 to 20% show symptoms. Only 10 to 20% show symptoms, and it's often us ladies with an autoimmune condition. How do you get H. pylori? It is transmissible through saliva, through food, and through contaminated water. So if you kiss your partner and your partner has it, if you share a utensil or a water bottle with your kiddo and they have it and you're just passing it back and forth, if you use a fork that wasn't washed properly at a restaurant or drink from a cup that just wasn't sanitized properly and the person before who used it had H. pylori, now you can get H. pylori. Very highly transmissible, very common. But for most of us in the world, it's asymptomatic. For those of us with Hashimoto's, H. pylori is much more common. It can lead to gas. And if you broke down from the bottom of your chest bone, your sternum, to the top of your pubic bone, if you broke that area down in thirds, you would have bloating due to H. pylori in the upper third of your abdomen. So kind of right under your ribs to right above your belly button. Reflux, burping, GERD, brain fog, especially after you eat. Maybe the food sits heavy in your stomach after you eat. And you're like, oh my God, I got to go horizontal. I'm so tired. I used to feel that way. Nausea. A certain percentage can lead to stomach ulcers. Leads to low stomach acid, also known as hypochlorhydria. And in a very small percentage, about 2% of cases, can lead to stomach cancer. So here's the kicker. Low stomach acid from H. pylori, right? Because H. pylori infection decreases our own production of stomach acid, is devastating for women with Hashimoto's. We need our stomach acid to break down our food. If we don't break down our food, especially being hypothyroid, food moves slower through the digestive tract. It can lead to SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, can lead to our food not being digested and chunks of food are coming out in our stool. And so it is very important if you've been doing all the things, which I know so many women have, we get the motivation to go to the gym to do the workout, but we're still fatigued. We eat the protein and eat clean, but we're like, the scale isn't budging. What's going on? So if you feel like you're doing all the things, this could be one of the missing pieces. Let's talk about some research. around H. pylori as it is tied to thyroid antibodies. So one of the studies was back in 2010. It looked at 101 female patients with known Hashimoto's. So everyone in the study was a female and they had Hashimoto's. And what they found was there was a significantly higher prevalence of H. pylori in women who had elevated TPO, thyroid peroxidase antibodies, and TGAB, thyroglobulin antibodies, compared to healthy controls. The healthy controls were, the prevalence of H. pylori was around 5%. The prevalence of H. pylori in those with Hashimoto's was much higher, around 50%. And what they found was that infection of H. pylori was much more common in women under 45, suggesting that potentially autoimmune triggers like H. pylori could be the trigger for Hashimoto's in younger people, younger patients, because oftentimes Hashimoto's is uncovered when we go through perimenopause, menopause, late 40s, early 50s. That's the majority of women who get Hashimoto's. But now we're finding that younger and younger, I was diagnosed at 36 years old, younger and younger women are getting diagnosed. Well, why is that? One of the reasons this study points to, and this is in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology, points towards maybe it's because they have an underlying H. pylori infection, which is driving up their thyroid antibodies, and women younger are getting diagnosed. So the study highlights that H. pylori may not only just coexist with Hashimoto's, right? Lots of Hashi ladies have H. pylori infection in their stomach, but could be contributing to it, especially in the younger women. So I thought that was very, very interesting. There was another study back in 2009 in the Journal of Endocrine Research where there was a high prevalence of H. pylori infection in autoimmune thyroid disease. It was a meta-analysis. And the meta-analysis looked at multiple studies with over 1,500 patients, and they found a statistically significant correlation between H. pylori infection and autoimmune thyroid diseases, including Hashimoto's and Graves' disease. And they suggested that H. pylori could be a triggering environmental factor in those genetically susceptible individuals who have a propensity to have an autoimmune disease like Hashimoto's or Graves. And why does this matter? Because we're looking for patterns. If you're doing all the things and you're not feeling better, what is the missing piece? And then we start to look at symptomatology, gut bloat, especially upper third, burping, brain fog, food that does not move through the digestive tract quick enough. It's actually moving quite slow. The need for digestive enzymes, always. And so if you have Hashimoto's, you're more likely to have H. pylori. Some of the mechanisms of that are a leaky gut trigger. H. pylori can disrupt the gut lining and can cause immune confusion. It can lead to molecular mimicry, where antibodies made against H. pylori resemble thyroid tissue. It can lead to low stomach acid. And if you have low stomach acid, you are not breaking down your food. And if you're not breaking down your food, you are not getting the nutrients from your food. And that can lead to nutrient deficiencies, specifically B12, zinc, iron. And if you're low in those nutrients, that can lead to poorer thyroid hormone production and conversion. And then lastly is a stress response. If you have an H. pylori infection, it could create this constant immune activation, which then raises cortisol. And when we know cortisol goes up, this will suppress our thyroid function. So think of H. pylori like this puppeteer, this infection that is gently pulling strings behind your fatigue, your joint pain, your belly bloat, that just never seems to go away. Why do women with Hashimoto's or an autoimmune condition are like canaries in the coal mine? Why do we feel H. pylori more if 80% of the world is infected and 50% of the people in the States have it? Well, our immune system with an autoimmune disease is already primed to overreact. And when gut health is compromised, like if we have SIBO, candida, parasites, H. pylori hides in the stomach lining right along with those other ones. Granted, SIBO is in the small intestine. Candida can be in the small or large intestine. Parasites can be everywhere, gallbladder, liver, intestine, you name it. And our hormones, as women, are sensitive to gut inflammation. Think of estrogen dominance, cortisol dysregulation. Think about PMS. So if you've ever said, God, I just feel like something's off, but your labs are normal. If you feel like, I do not feel like myself, but my labs are normal. I've been told they're normal. What the heck's going on? Just lean in. This episode is for you. You've raised your hand. Yes. The upper third of my gut is bloated. Yes. When I eat food, I feel like I need to take a nap and the food just sits in there like a rock. Yes. I burp. And I thought burping was normal, but I'm going to tell you a little secret. It's not. So how can we start to test and what to do if we have an H. pylori infection? So there's different ways to test. Some conventional docs look for it because they know that it can lead to stomach cancer and stomach ulcers. But there's also a functional way to test. Some are more invasive. Some are less invasive. Some are more sensitive. Some are less sensitive. So let's talk about conventional. You could do an H. pylori breath test. It is a urea breath test. Non-invasive, okay? And it is picking up urease, which is an H. pylori enzyme. That's one way to pick up H. pylori. Oftentimes, it can be a false negative. So it shows up negative. Doctor's like, you're good. And you're like, but I have like all the classic symptoms. A more invasive way, one way that's considered the gold standard, is an endoscopy with a biopsy. So it's a visual inspection of the gut lining, the stomach lining. And then they take a biopsy and they check for H. pylori. I've also seen this to be a false negative. The other way you can test is through a stool test, which is picking up H. pylori DNA, even if in small amounts. So think about a biopsy. They're not going to take 100 pieces of your stomach lining. They're going to take a handful. But what if the H. pylori isn't in that piece of stomach lining tissue? That's where a GI MAP stool test comes in. That's a functional test. It's a PCR test. So it's looking for H. pylori DNA in small amounts. And it's seeing if you're pooping that out or passing it in your stool. GI MAP also gives a full picture of your gut microbiome. So not only is it looking for H. pylori, there are markers suggestive of SIBO, candida, parasites. Also looking, hey, are you someone that should eat gluten or not eat gluten? I would say I have everyone start that I work with one-on-one in my functional medicine practice. Start with not eating gluten. Do an elimination diet. Try AIP with a reintroduction phase. But then we also look at the data. So if your anti-gliadin IgA, if you're making antibodies to the gliadin protein, which is the protein in gluten, and your antibodies are high, we're going to cut out gluten. If your antibodies are low, maybe you're someone who could eat gluten. So just other data comes up on that GI MAP PCR stool test. I have found breath tests to be negative, sometimes an endoscopy to be negative, but then someone is passing the DNA of H. pylori and it comes up in a GI MAP. There are different ways to address it. One is a conventional route where it is a proton pump inhibitor and two antibiotics. There's a triple therapy. There's a quad therapy. And so that is conventional route. I think it's about 10 to 14 days. Some people feel fine on that approach. Some people feel like they were hit by a bus. Everything is worse. And then there is a natural approach, a nutraceutical approach. And that functional approach is including mastic gum, DGL, zinc carnosine, NAC, some pyloricil. There's some supplements where there's a combination of some of those products. And that is typically 60 to 90 days. And what you want to do is just also make sure you're addressing it in their partner. So I've seen people who have seen other functional medicine practitioners. They're like, I have done 5 GI MAPs. I have treated H. pylori 5 times, some with a supplement, some with a triple therapy approach, and it keeps coming back. And then I ask this very simple question that really every functional medicine practitioner should ask, but sometimes they're in a rush. Are you also addressing it in your partner or anyone that you're kissing or sharing utensils with? And typically, if someone has it recurring, it's no, it was never addressed to my partner. So that is often a missing piece in the equation. It's at the top of the digestive tract. So I really like to address it first before we move on to anything else, like bloating in the lower third of the belly, which could be SIBO, parasites, mold exposure, optimizing hormones, all those other things. So in my world, it's addressed first. And what I have found is thyroid antibodies come down. I have seen it in my practice. I have found the brain fog lift and the fatigue lift when they've been doing everything. They've been having a practitioner play with their hormones, change the dose, and it's not really giving them any results. And they address H. pylori, and it's like someone turned a light switch on their brain. Pretty cool. So decreased thyroid antibodies, a relief of symptoms that looked like thyroid symptoms, fatigue, brain fog, not losing weight, but were actually gut issues leading to a disruption in thyroid hormones and thyroid antibodies. Here's a little recap. H. pylori, super common, but not harmless, especially for us Hashi ladies. For women with the Hashis, it can drive quietly these symptoms that look like Hashimoto's, but are actually something else, and can also cause autoimmune flares. I'm a big test, don't guess kind of gal, also taking a thorough history, but testing and addressing it is a game changer on your Hashi journey. So if you haven't done this, you're like, why has no one told me this? This is the first time I'm hearing this. This is one of the main questions I ask is, what does bloating look like? How is it around food? Does it change throughout the day? Does it change when you're in your house versus out of your house? Do you take digestive enzymes? Like, such a deep dive just into bloating. I just talked to someone who joined my one-on-one functional medicine practice, and she's like, I've been working with a functional medicine doc for 4 years and they never asked about bloating. And like, mind blown. My mind was blown. I'm like, how could they never ask? So if you're in this cycle and you're stuck and you're doing all the things and you're in this cycle of flares and fatigue, I want you to consider, what if it's not your thyroid? Because sometimes with Hashimoto's, we tell ourselves, my thyroid's broken. But what if it's not it? What if it's just getting bullied by this stomach bacteria that you didn't know you had? If you want a deeper dive, you're like, oh my God, raised my hand to everything Emily just said, reach out. I'll drop a link in the show notes. Test, don't guess. I order testing for my clients, and let's get to the real root cause. You do not have to suffer. If you want to book a call, they are free. We can jump on a call, see if I'm a good fit for you, if you're a good fit for me. I take high-powered type A action taker women, not women that are going to hem and haw and ruminate of like, should I eat gluten? Should I not? It's like, here's a plan, execute. I'm going to hold you accountable. Let's go. Giddy up. And if this feels like a good fit, go ahead, book a call. I'd love to jump on a call with you. And if this just totally blew your mind, go ahead, rate and review this episode on your favorite podcast platform, Spotify, iTunes, you name it. And I will see you next week, ladies.